This is Radio Superior 1950, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the land of lakes in Superior, Wisconsin. Jack McKenna here. It's Monday, June 26th, 1950. Jay Fisher is in with the labor news and Rapid Ray as the sports plus the best music of 1950. First, Lou Martin has news about war breaking out in a place called Korea. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Dubester Drugs, with 50-cent fountain pens on sale for just 19 cents. Dubester Drug, with talk of the town values. Dial 4801. Good afternoon, Lou.
Good afternoon, Jack, and good listeners. North Korea has invaded South Korea and are nearing Seoul. And President Truman pledges U.S. support for South Korea. We begin our World Shortwave Report from Seoul.
This is the capital of South Korea, the besieged city of Seoul. Daryl Berrigan, your correspondent. North communists invading South Korea threw a tank column to the outskirts of Seoul early this morning after invading the country yesterday. President Syngman Rhee blamed the crisis on too little, too late American aid. The 75-year-old president of the American-sponsored Southern Republic told the Associated Press, quote, "With American aid coming as late as it has, it is very difficult to save anything. We have nothing to stop those tanks." President Rhee says he did not mean it. Looks like failure at this time. South Korean spokesman Clarence Rhee reports that most fronts of the southern defense are doing very well against the Northern Reds, who invaded with 75,000 troops yesterday morning. North of Seoul, the enemy is very near. He put the distance at 12 miles away, but other reports say the communist column has speared past the 9-mile point and raced to Seoul's outskirts early this morning with little opposition. The invaders broadcast the demand for surrender of the entire Southern Army. The surrender demand was made over the Pyongyang radio by General Chae In-yong, Northern Forces commander who led the Southern invasion. Prospects of total defeat of the Southern forces through bad morale rather than by being beaten in the field are in evidence at this zero hour today. The Northern column that thrust perilously upon Seoul did so by piercing two full Southern divisions that were engaged in a counterattack. It reached Seoul's outskirts with little or no resistance over the last dozen miles. Southern resistance collapsed at Wijambu, 12 miles north of Seoul. A further defense was being put up 3 miles to the south, but there are no details. The American embassy burned its important secret papers in a huge bonfire. Air raid sirens screeched. The city is buzzing after four northern planes strafed downtown streets. Two ships carrying 700 dependents of Americans sailed from the port of Incheon tonight bound for Japan. In Seoul, this is Daryl Berrigan reporting.
This is Washington, Lyle C. Wilson, United Press. President Truman today pledged full United States support of United Nations efforts to end the unprovoked attack against South Korea. In a statement, the president declared, quote, "Willful disregard of the obligation to keep the peace cannot be tolerated by nations that support the United Nations Charter," unquote. He says the United States is pleased with the speed and determination of the UN Security Council in ordering a withdrawal of the invading forces. Quote, "Our concern over the lawless action taken by the forces from North Korea and our sympathy and support for the people of Korea in this situation are being demonstrated by the cooperative action of American personnel in Korea, as well as by steps taken to expedite assistance being furnished under the Mutual Defense Assistance Program. Those responsible for this act of aggression must realize how seriously the United States views such threats to the peace of the world," end quote. Sunday night, the chief executive and 13 of his administration leaders, including Secretary of State Acheson and Defense Secretary Johnson, conferred for more than 3 hours at Blair House. They approved sending war materials, including 10 F-51 Mustang fighter planes, to General MacArthur, who is in Japan. In Washington, this is Lyle C. Wilson.
This is the nation's capital. Hightower here. Republican senators agreed today that the communist attack on South Korea should not be allowed to involve this country in war. Chairman of the Republican Conference, Senator Milliken of Colorado, says the GOP members agreed in a caucus that this country should provide military supplies and other aid for South Korea. Quote, but it was the unanimous opinion that we have no obligation to go to war and that this incident should not be allowed to involve us in war. End of quote. The Republicans criticized the military establishment and the State Department for what they said was a failure of intelligence services to warn this country that the Russian-trained and equipped forces of North Korea were ready to strike. In Washington, this is John Hightower.
Associated Press foreign analyst Dewitt McKenzie here. The United States has denounced as an act of aggression the communist-backed attack by North Korea on the Republic of Southern Korea. It is rushing military supplies from Japan to its little protege. The South Korea ambassador to Washington, John Myung Chang, not only brands the act as aggression, but says it couldn't have been carried out without Soviet direction. Can this possibly mean that Russia is using this incident as a springboard for another major war? There has been no sign that the Soviet Union wants world war at this juncture. Time will have to demonstrate the red motive. However, Southern Korea in itself is of such great strategic value that Russia undoubtedly would do much to gain complete domination of it. The peninsula of Korea, if controlled by unfriendly hands, would be a powerful military base for action against Japan, or to be held as a threat to secure concessions. Also, in the view of American officials at Washington, it is a military probing operation to test the resistance and power of the non-communist world. This is DeWitt McKenzie, Associated Press.
Your man with the Washington Whirligig, Drew Pearson, here. In this year, 1950, halfway through this amazing century, we may bog down in an age of fear. Faced with the awful knowledge that others have the atomic bomb, faced with the fear of the hydrogen bomb, of bacteriological warfare, of new transoceanic submarines and transatlantic rockets, we are in definite danger of relapsing into an age of fear. An age when we do not go forward because we are paralyzed with fright. The symptoms of fear have been all too apparent in recent months, ever since President Truman announced that Russia had the atomic bomb. It is a well-known medical fact that fear causes paralysis and lack of decision. When injected into the human body, it causes nausea and poison. Injected into the body politic, it has the same effect. Perhaps that is why we have been so busy looking under State Department beds for commies and worrying about five-year-old mistakes that we fail to look ahead to prevent the mistakes of the future. Washington and Jefferson had a lot more excuse to succumb to fear than we. They were operating 13 weak and struggling colonies, but they were surrounded by big and promising lands. They were so busy pioneering, so busy pushing on to new frontiers, that they didn't have the time to be afraid. Yet we, the most powerful nation in the world, are so busy concentrating on armed defense that either we don't have time or are too paralyzed with fear to take the offensive. With the Washington Whirligig, this is Drew Pearson.
The United States Senate voted to eliminate an amendment in the peacetime draft that would allow men to serve only with people of their own race. The vote was 42-29 with Wisconsin Senators Alexander Wiley and Joe McCarthy not voting. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:09. Jack McKenna has this message from Duvester Drug.
Thank you, old-timer. Indeed, I do have a word of the values at Duvester's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Big sale, big sale. Jeweled wristwatches, Swiss-made, mind you, shock-proof, luminous dial, sweep second-hand, a guarantee for 1 year by the manufacturer, as low as $4.95. Also, they have spick and span, a limit of two, 21 cents each. That do besters. Toothbrushes, by golly, three for 59 cents. They're usually $1.49 apiece. How about that? Oh, fountain pens, a 50-cent value, just 19 cents. It goes on and on, folks. Like the alarm clock for $1.69, triple-tested, 40-hour. DuBester Drugs Incorporated, 1320 Tower Avenue in Superior.
Great Northern passenger trains operating on or close to schedule today, while freight service was completely cut off. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson reports.
Iron ore shipping was going forward only under extreme difficulties as a result of the strike of the Switchman's Union of North America. Great Northern Superior Superintendent C.O. Hooker says supervisory officials are endeavoring to keep iron ore moving from the mines on the Minnesota Range to waiting freighters at Superior GN docks, the largest in the world. He says that eight freighters were loaded at the dock during the past 24 hours, but that figure would be smaller during the next 24-hour period. Quoting Mr. Hooker, "We're doing the best we can to keep the ore moving." Chairman of the Superior Switchman's Union, Leo Legesse, says the strike is 100% effective. He says members of other operating rail unions are respecting the picket lines and that other unions are being asked to respect the picket lines, although these have been going through. No reports of violence occurred during the first day of the strike. However, one Great Northern yardmaster, Henry Conroy of Superior, was injured while working in the 28th Street yards on Sunday. It appears that Mr. Conroy may have fallen from a car, Lou.
Restaurants of the Superior Restaurant Association closed since Thursday because of a dispute with the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union will reopen tomorrow. A meeting will be held between management and the union tomorrow morning, with a representative of the Wisconsin Employment Relations Board attending. Business agent for the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union Local 48, Charles Bannister, expressed a willingness to reopen talks with the Restaurant Association in the dispute which has shut down a majority of the city's eating places. Restaurants closed their doors last Thursday when the union established a picket line at Chef's Restaurant. 27 other Superior restaurants then locked their doors, which the union says amounts to a lockout. The union hope of bringing its Superior contract up to the level of Duluth includes pay increases of from 10 to 25 cents an hour, plus a welfare program that is in effect in Duluth. There may be a solution to kill the sea lamprey eels playing havoc on the Great Lakes. Interior Secretary Chapman says the Cook Research Lab in Chicago is experimenting with an electrical gadget that should do away with the lamprey, which has destroyed much of the trout fishing industry. The gadget would attract the lamprey with a bright light and kill it with an electric shock. No sea lamprey has been found yet in Lake Superior. Judge Claude Cooper fined a Superior man for operating a house of gambling. Mike Stoll of North 3rd Street paid a $103 fine, while Irving Frederick paid $13 for frequenting a gambling house, Jack.
So that's the name you gave the cops, eh, Lou? Irving Frederick?
Cute.
Lou Irving Martin, a newsman, $13 lighter, thanks to Judge Cooper. Our forecast for this Monday, June 26th, 1950, calls for cool June temperatures tonight, with a low around 45 degrees, sunny, and a little warmer tomorrow, and not as windy, with a high at 72. It's music time, folks. Here's Jimmy Rogers and his new hit on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Honeycomb, honeycomb. Well, it's a darn good life, and it's kind of funny how the Lord made the bee, and the bee made the honey, and the honey bee looking for a home, and they called it a honeycomb, and they roamed the world, and they gathered all of the honeycomb in the one sweet fall, and the honeycomb from a million trips made my baby's lips. Oh, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone, and
talking. Honeycomb, well, honeycomb, won't you be my baby? Well, honeycomb, be my home. What a darn good life when you got a wife like a honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
And the Lord said, now that I made a bee, I'm gonna look all around for a green, green tree. And he made a little tree, and I guess you heard. Pop then, well, he made a little bird, and they waited all around until the end of spring. I guess every note that the birdies sing, and they put them all in the one sweet tone. For my honeycomb, oh, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone, and made a walking, talking honeycomb. Well, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. What a darn good life when you got a wife like honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
And the Lord said, now that I made a bird, I'm gonna look all around for a little old word that sounds about sweet like a turtle dove. And I guess I'm gonna call it love. And he roamed the world, looking everywhere, getting love from here, love from there. And he put it all in a little old fire of my baby's heart. Oh, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone that made a walkin', talkin' honeycomb. Well, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, honeycomb be my home. What a darn good life when you got a wife like honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
Jimmy Rogers and Honeycomb on station KUWS.
Did you take my sandwiches from the fridge?
No, I brought my own.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. I certainly did.
Well, if you did, it isn't in the fridge.
What? Call the cops. Get your buddy Judge Cooper on the case. Do a news story for crying out loud. I've got a complete description. Be on the lookout for an egg, an onion, and Limburger with mayo on pumpernickel. We've got to catch the thief.
He'd be easy to find. Just smell his breath. You know, I can understand somebody stealing my ham and cheese on rye, but I can't understand anybody desperate enough to steal your gastronomical disaster.
This is terrible. I'm going to investigate, folks. Sherlock McKenna is on the case. And here's pretty Kitty Callan and her new number with Little Things Mean a Lot on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Blow me a kiss from across the room. Say I look nice when I'm not. Touch my hair as you pass my chair. Little things mean a lot. Give me your arm as we cross the street. Call me at 6 on the dot. A line a day when you're far away. Little things mean a lot. Don't have to buy me diamonds and pearls, champagne, sables, or such. I never cared much for diamonds and pearls, 'cause honestly, honey, they just cost money. Give me your hand when I've lost the way. Give me a shoulder to cry on. Whether the day is bright or gray, give me your heart to rely on. Send me the warmth of a secret smile to show me you haven't forgot. For always and ever, now and forever, little things mean a lot. Whether the day is bright or gray, give me your heart to rely on. send me the warmth of a secret smile to show me you haven't forgot that always and ever, now and forever, little things mean.
Pretty Kitty Callan's latest hit, Little Things Mean a Lot. Hiya, Ray. Why are you looking at me like that?
Because my two bratwurst and kraut dogs are missing from the break room. That's why.
Are you insinuating that I... Hey, why does everyone think I'd take their sandwiches? Why me? Lou's a lawbreaker around here. He has an alias of Irvin and everything.
I do not.
Well, all I know is that with this restaurant strike going on, nobody's sandwich is safe. Apparently not even yours, Jake. Now, go ahead, give me the treatment.
Just to show you there are no hard feelings, here's Rapid Ray Paulson with the sports.
Hello, fans of the sporting world. Baltimore may land a Major League Baseball franchise if it puts a roof on Municipal Stadium. That's according to Mayor Thomas DeAlexandro. He and News Post editor Roger Pippin are the leading drum beaters in the 3-year effort to move the St. Louis Browns to Baltimore. A week ago, Browns owner DeWitt complained of poor attendance and threatened to move if things didn't improve. The Pittsburgh Pirates pay slugger Ralph Kiner a whopping $422 a game. But the Brooklyn Dodgers would gladly pay double that if Kiner would go fishing when the two teams meet. The solid man from New Mexico leads the league with 18 home runs this season, clubbing 7 against the Bums. Ralph's favorite park remains Pittsburgh's Forbes Field. He's hit 108 homers there in his career, a big reason why he's paid $65,000 a year. Negroes in general, and Morgan State in particular, have proved that they are the fastest short-distance runners in the country. But bad news, folks. The National Amateur Athletic Union won't be taking any with them on their overseas tour. The entire team will be white. The reason? One of the 5 stops is South Africa, which won't allow Negroes to compete. If it isn't opposing pitchers that are giving the blues to Superior's Northern League team this weekend, it's Mother Nature throwing them the curve. After a rainout Saturday night at Fargo-Moorhead, manager Benny Hoffman's Blues were rained out at home in the Muni last night. Ace pitcher Bob Black hits the mound against the Sioux Falls Canaries. This is Rapid Ray Paulson, reminding you that everyone loves a good sport. Right, Jake?
Good sports don't accuse buddies of stealing their bratwurst and sauerkraut, though.
Well, sorry. It's just so hard to resist brats and kraut.
I've got some clues from my investigation, however. I'll solve the case yet. Let's listen to Archie Blyer now and Hernando's Hideaway. Maybe that's where he took the sandwiches, on the Martin and McKenna show.
I know a dark, secluded place, a place where no one knows your face. A glass of wine, a fast embrace, it's called Hernando's Hideaway. Ole! All you see are silhouettes, and all you hear are castanets, and no one cares how late it gets. Not at Hernando's Hideaway. Ole! At the Golden Finger Bowl or any place you go, you will meet your Uncle Max and everyone you know. But if you go to the spot that I am thinking of, you will be free to gaze at me and talk of love. Just knock 3 times and whisper low that you and I were sent by Joe. Then strike
a match, and you will know you're in Fernando's Hideaway. Olé.
Archie Blyer and Hernando's Hideaway on KUWS.
It's time for Labor News and Views with Labor Editor Jay Fisher. Good evening, sir.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. All I know is I'm upset, and so are my union brothers and sisters. That right-wing evening telegram has got us broiling mad. For cry eye, they run that drivel by syndicated columnist Lou Schneider, and he's got my dander up.
To the boiling point.
Hey, let the man talk.
You ask, what does Schneider say? Says right here in that man's column that ever since FDR's New Deal, labor has grown into big labor. Now, what do you suppose he means by that crack? But what really missed me is when that guy writes that we union leaders have learned how to stretch a day's work into 2 days, like the English and Italians do. This fella's talking drivel. Drivel, I say. Look at the record, auto workers. All union brothers and sisters, mind you, just turned out 200,000 cars and trucks in 1 week. 1 week! That beats the old record by thousands. Does that sound like they're lying down on the job? Does it?
No.
Oh.
And railroads. Union men keep our trains running on time, even though they've been cutting our crews. And the telegram, they're a perfect example of what union labor can do. Take a look inside that newspaper building. They're laboring at top speed, I tells you. Top speed. If there's a harder group of writers and reporters in the country, I'd like to see it. Same goes for the composing room and the presses. Well, anyway, I got that off my chest.
Feel better?
Yeah, kind of. I'm not so tense.
I'm glad that we could be therapeutic.
Hey, I've got a special message for everyone to support your Superior Blues baseball team. There's only a couple months left in the season, and fans have got to get out and support the club. I mean to tell you, if you don't, they won't come up even Steven. Good cities need swell, clean family entertainment like baseball. It attracts new businesses and jobs to have the Blues here. So, union men, bring the family to the Muni for a game and a couple of dogs.
I don't think they allow dogs at Municipal Stadium.
Not woof-woof dogs. He means hot dogs.
Yeah, as in tube steaks. Speaking of that, hot coffee and lunch is being served at the Labor Temple for hotel and restaurant employees, union brothers and sisters, who are walking the picket line in Superior. We want everyone to know that we're only striking Chef's Restaurant, but the owners have locked us out of the rest of the eateries. For cry eye, we've been negotiating in good faith for months, and you know what we got, huh? Do you?
Tell us, Brother Jay.
We got nowhere, man. Nowhere. Restaurant workers are getting as low as 46 cents an hour in Superior. That's 30 cents lower than the national minimum wage of 75 cents.
Well, bless my soul. It's one of those pinko labor guys who's responsible for me not getting my coffee at the coffee shop. You know, what's wrong with this country?
Not getting your coffee is a big, 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 big problem.
Well, I'll tell you what, everyone's looking out for themselves.
I want more money. I want benefits.
Well, you can just go to work for Uncle Joe Stalin, fella.
Hey, Buster, you could take your McCarthy tactics for a hike. Those hard-working union people fought in the last war so we can be free and prosper. Besides, there's enough to go around for everybody.
No, I knew it. I knew it, a commie. Share the wealth, well, la, ti, doggone da.
Who you calling commie, Adolf?
I'm calling you, comrade. Because of this restaurant strike, I've got to eat home cooking. You know how lousy that is? I mean, man, a man can only take so much. And it's all your fault.
Better play some music.
Right. Here's Gogi Grant and her new hit, The Wayward Wind, on the Martin and McKenna Melee.
Labor's not responsible for your matrimonial problems.
Well, I'll tell you, brother, my manials are gastronomical.
restless wind that yearns to wander, and he was born the next of kin, the next of kin.
Cogey Grant and The Wayward Wind on station KUWS. Lou Martin has this news bulletin.
From Formosa, nationalist China leader Chiang Kai-shek sent a letter to South Korean President Syngman Rhee condemning the invasion by North Korea. He says this is another example of the vicious schemes of the Soviet Union. Meanwhile, South Korean forces are reported to be retreating southward, leaving the capital of Seoul.
Wow. We might have another war on our hands.
Do I smell egg, onion, and Limburger?
Maybe. All right, people. Who's got the Limburger breath?
I smell it, too.
It's coming from the direction of the colonel.
Aha! I do believe we've solved the mystery of our missing lunches.
I didn't steal any lunches. The colonel doesn't steal.
But you ate our sandwiches.
Look, guys, I was desperate. I mean, Mrs. Colonel Raffley is a great and everything, but she's not blessed with any culinary skills. I saw the sandwiches and nobody was eating, so I thought, well, I'd rescue them.
Rescue the sandwiches?
You guys don't mind now, do you?
Well, suddenly, he believes in share-alike, I see. Some would call him a binko for that.
Maybe we can go to the labor temple and rescue some sandwiches there.
Yeah, come on down, brothers. We got the head chefs of 28 restaurants with nothing but time on their hands whipping up some great dishes.
You know, I was just playing with you about that commie pinko remark. Brother Jay.
Yeah, you can come too.
Another happy ending on the Martin and McKenna Show, folks. Stay tuned for Bing Crosby, the Lone Ranger, the amazing Mr. Malone, and Arthur Godfrey. We'll be back same time, same place, on your radio dial. The good Lord willing, that is. And we can keep rescuing sandwiches. For Lou Martin, the Hungry Colonel.
And Jay Fisher, proud to be a Union man.
I'm Jack McKenna, wishing one and all a good night.
You know, you Union guys are all right.
Well, I guess you're okay for a right-wing extremist.
No need to get mushy, gentlemen.
Thanks, fellas.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1950. an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Paul Guggenheimer, Tom Martinson, John Munson, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1950 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.